Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I have an episode about asthma under production, and I'd like to ask you guys another question, and that is about an asthma exacerbation plan. I mentioned that I'm seeing my doctor in a couple of days after a couple of exacerbations lately to see if I can get on Singular in addition to the inhaler or something like that. And it's made me think. I mentioned that becoming a father has really driven home to me that my health is no longer just something that I want to be healthy. It's I need to be healthy for somebody else. And I guess it's eroded any last feelings that I'm being, you know, self-indulgent or finicky by going to the doctor to say my asthma control needs to be better. It's kind of pushed me to be more proactive, I guess. So I'm going to have that discussion in a couple of days, and hopefully my doctor will be able to guide me through, you know, the medical stuff, what I need to be on, you know, adjusting my treatment plan. But something that I really want to do as well, and I think this is more on me, is to know what to do in an asthma exacerbation. And I'm talking specifically about things like peak flow meters and an asthma plan. For other asthmatics, I'm sure you guys can relate. When your asthma is bad and you go to the doctor, you're in a bad way. Not only is I think asthma is people without it, it's exhausting. Having an asthma exacerbation is terrifying. It's uncomfortable and it's also deeply tiring. So usually the state if you're having asthma exacerbation and you've gone through the protocol of you're taking your preventative, you're taking Ventolin, you're still really struggling. I think that's usually the stage that I get into the a medical care setting for my asthma, whether it's primary care or urgent care. And usually it's kind of nebulizer, steroids, the stuff that you can't self-administer. But at that point, you're deeply exhausted. And by the time you get something that just works to let you breathe again, you say, oh, it's like you can't describe the wonderful feeling of being able to take a full breath when you haven't maybe been able to do that in days. And the temptation is kind of like, oh, okay, I can go back to not thinking about the need to breathe again. What's happening in the news? And it's usually at that point in time that you're kind of being discharged that someone says, here is an asthma care plan. And they print out some confusing looking thing with things for you to fill out as homework, sort of. I've had this experience a few times, and probably most people like me put that on their cabinet, say forget about it, and then you go back to your happy life with your asthma under control, and then the same thing happens. So I've seen a few times these care plans, and I bought an oximeter from the internet. I figured it would be a good thing to have. When COVID broke out, I was pretty scared for a while, actually. It wasn't clear if asthmatics were at serious risk or just regular risk. So I got myself kitted out, as I do, with a few KN95s, a respirator that looks like it was pulled from the set of a horror movie, an oximeter. But I'm not really, I have to be honest, I was just kind of picking up stuff, thinking, well, I should just have these. But I don't know, I've read contradictory things. I live in Israel. And the healthcare here is really good. And I guess I've developed the mentality that why would I get a dubious oximeter when if it gets bad, I can go to a proper care setting. And I've heard doctors say the same thing about peak flow meters, that they used to be really recommended, spirometers, those kind of things. And now it seems to me that they've kind of taken a step back and said that those are no longer, or they're less in favor of them. The other thing about asthma that I know is that how you feel doesn't necessarily correlate with what you test at. So I've a few times had the experience of feeling like I can't breathe, that really, really tight feeling on your chest. You go into the you say, okay, I have to go to urgent care. You go there, they put a little thing on your finger. They see your oxygen, you can see your oxygen saturation is like 95%. And they say, yeah, you're basically okay. Here's some steroids, go home. And I've also had the experience of going to my doctor once with asthma. And she was like, why are you here? You should have some backup steroids. And if you need them, just start them. You don't need to get to this point or sort of, you know, come into this setting. So I've received a lot of contradictory information from doctors and from other sources. And I guess I'm just a bit confused as to what a reasonable and responsible exacerbation plan would look like. The final thing, Herman and Corin, is I've been into tech for a while, but I've actually never really explored what tech there is to help asthmatics. So I much rather use things like apps than rely upon my asthma care plan being some document in some folder somewhere. So I'm on Android. Do you know of any good apps that I can be using to take the guesswork out of the question of how's my asthma? Okay, is it time to, you know, and when it gets worse, hopefully with some kind of precision, making sure you're taking a safe level of Ventolin and not too much, knowing when to go for when to call a doctor, when to go to urgent care, when to go to ER. I would love to have some clarity on all of those things. So Herman and Corin, over to both of you. Help me become a more informed and better asthmatic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and today we are getting into something that is quite literally a matter of life and breath. Our housemate Daniel sent us a prompt that really hit home. He has been dealing with some pretty intense asthma exacerbations lately, and he is looking for a way to move from just surviving these episodes to actually managing them with some technical precision.
Herman Poppleberry here, and I have to say, Daniel is definitely not alone in this. Asthma management is one of those fields that has seen some massive shifts in the last few years, but the way it is communicated to patients often feels stuck in the 1980s. You get these photocopied paper action plans that look like a middle school homework assignment, and then you are expected to navigate a terrifying medical emergency with just a plastic tube and a prayer.
Exactly. And that is what Daniel was mentioning. That feeling of being discharged from the hospital or urgent care, feeling exhausted and terrified, and then being handed a care plan that is so easy to ignore once the immediate crisis passes. But since he became a father, he has that extra motivation to stay on top of it. He is seeing his doctor soon to discuss his treatment plan, possibly starting Singulair, and he wants to know how to use tools like peak flow meters and apps to take the guesswork out of it.
It is a great goal. And the contradiction he mentioned about pulse oximeters versus how he actually feels, that is a classic medical disconnect that we really need to unpack. Because if you are sitting there feeling like you are suffocating, and the little device on your finger says 95%, it makes you feel like you are losing your mind. But there is a very real physiological reason for that.
Let us start right there, because I think that is a huge point of confusion. Why can someone feel like they are in a major respiratory crisis while their oxygen saturation looks relatively normal?
This is so important. A pulse oximeter measures oxygen saturation in your blood, which is basically a measure of how well your lungs are transferring oxygen into your bloodstream. But asthma is primarily a disease of ventilation, not just oxygenation. In an asthma attack, your airways are narrowing due to bronchospasm, they are swelling up with inflammation, and they are getting clogged with mucus. Your body is incredibly good at compensating for this, at least for a while. You breathe harder, you use your accessory muscles in your neck and chest, and you work 10 times harder than normal just to keep that oxygen level at 95 or 98%.
So the 95% reading is not telling you that you are fine. It is telling you how hard your body is working to stay fine.
Exactly. It is a lagging indicator. By the time your oxygen saturation starts dropping below 92 or 90% in an asthma attack, you are actually reaching a point of total exhaustion. Your muscles can no longer keep up the work required to ventilate. So, relying on an oximeter as your primary, am I okay tool for asthma is actually quite dangerous. It can give you a false sense of security while you are actually sliding toward respiratory failure.
That explains why the peak flow meter, which feels a bit more low-tech or old-school, is still the gold standard for home monitoring. It is measuring the actual mechanics of the air moving out of your lungs, right?
Precisely. Peak expiratory flow is a direct measure of airway obstruction. It is the fastest speed at which you can blow air out of your lungs. If your airways are narrow, that speed drops. And what is great about it is that it gives you an objective number long before you feel the shortness of breath. We call this being a poor perceiver. Some people can have their lung function drop by 30% and they barely notice until they are in real trouble. The peak flow meter caught that 30% drop 2 days ago.
So if Daniel is looking to be more proactive, he needs to establish his personal best with that peak flow meter.
Yes, and that is where the homework comes in, unfortunately. You have to blow into that thing every morning and evening for a couple of weeks when you are feeling well to find out what your 100% looks like. Once you have that number, you set up your zones. Green is 80 to 100% of your best. Yellow is 50 to 80%. Red is anything below 50%.
And the yellow zone is really where the battle is won or lost, right? That is the proactive window Daniel is looking for.
Absolutely. The yellow zone is the caution phase. It means your airways are narrowing. Maybe you have a cold coming on, or the pollen count is high, or you are just stressed. This is when your action plan should tell you to step up your maintenance medication or start a temporary course of rescue treatments. If you wait until you are in the red zone, you are already heading to the emergency room.
Daniel mentioned potentially starting Singulair, which is the brand name for Montelukast. I know that is a common add-on for people who are not fully controlled on just an inhaled corticosteroid. How does that fit into the modern treatment ladder?
Montelukast is interesting because it works differently than your typical inhalers. Most inhalers are either bronchodilators, which relax the muscles around the airways, or steroids, which reduce inflammation. Montelukast is a leukotriene receptor antagonist. Leukotrienes are chemicals your body releases when you breathe in an allergen, and they cause swelling in your lungs and tightening of the muscles. By blocking them, you are hitting the asthma from a different chemical angle.
But there is a bit of a buyer beware with Singulair, isn't there? I remember reading about a pretty significant warning from the Food and Drug Administration.
You are right to bring that up. In 2020, the Food and Drug Administration issued a boxed warning, which is their most serious type of warning for Montelukast. It is related to serious mental health side effects. We are talking about things like agitation, aggression, sleep disturbances, and even suicidal thoughts. It does not happen to everyone, of course, but for a new father like Daniel, it is definitely something to discuss with his doctor. You have to weigh the benefit of better asthma control against the risk of these neuropsychiatric effects.
It is a tough balance. It sounds like the proactive part of his health journey involves not just taking the meds, but being a very keen observer of how they affect his whole body, not just his lungs.
Definitely. And speaking of being proactive and informed, we have to talk about the massive shift in global asthma guidelines that has happened recently. For decades, the standard was, use a brown or orange inhaler every day for maintenance, and use a blue inhaler, the albuterol, for rescue. But the Global Initiative for Asthma, or GINA, has fundamentally changed that.
Right. I remember us touching on this briefly in a previous episode, but let us go deeper. They are moving away from albuterol as a standalone rescue therapy, right?
Yes, especially for adults and adolescents. The new gold standard, often called Track 1 in the GINA guidelines, is using a combination inhaler that contains both a low-dose corticosteroid and a fast-acting bronchodilator called formoterol. This is often referred to as SMART therapy or AIR therapy, which stands for Anti-Inflammatory Reliever Therapy.
Why the change? Is albuterol not effective anymore?
Albuterol is great at opening the airways quickly, but it does absolutely nothing for the underlying inflammation. In fact, if you use too much albuterol without a steroid, it can actually make your airways more reactive over time. It is like taking a painkiller for a broken leg but never putting a cast on it. You feel better for an hour, but you are still walking on a broken bone. By using a combination inhaler as your rescue, every time you reach for relief, you are also getting a microdose of anti-inflammatory medicine right when you need it most.
That seems so much more logical. It addresses the why of the attack, not just the what.
Exactly. And for someone like Daniel, who finds the paper plans easy to ignore, this all-in-one approach simplifies things. You do not have to remember two different inhalers during a crisis. You just use your maintenance inhaler more frequently according to the plan.
Let us talk about the technology side of this. Daniel asked about Android apps to help take the guesswork out of things. The paper plans are definitely a friction point. Are there digital versions that actually work?
There are some really interesting developments here. One of the leaders in this space is Propeller Health. They actually have a physical sensor that clips onto the top of most standard inhalers. It syncs with an app on your phone via Bluetooth. Every time you use your inhaler, it records the time and the location.
That is fascinating. So if Daniel uses his rescue inhaler 3 times in 1 afternoon at a specific park, the app can correlate that with local pollen counts or air quality data?
Precisely. It starts to build a map of your triggers. But more importantly for Daniel's proactive goal, it tracks your rescue-free days. If it sees your rescue inhaler usage creeping up over a few days, the app can send you an alert saying, hey, your asthma control is slipping. It might be time to check your action plan or call your doctor. It turns that yellow zone from a vague feeling into a data-driven notification.
What about apps that do not require a separate sensor? Just something to help him manage that homework aspect of the peak flow and the action plan.
There are a few good ones. An app called Asthma Hub is quite popular. It allows you to digitize your action plan so it is on your phone, not in a folder on top of the fridge. It has built-in peak flow tracking where you can just input your numbers and it automatically color-codes them into green, yellow, or red. It also has reminders for your daily maintenance meds, which is the number one thing people forget once they start feeling better.
That feeling better trap is so real. You stop the meds because you feel fine, but the reason you feel fine is that the meds were working.
It is the asthma paradox. The more successful your treatment is, the less motivated you feel to continue it. But for an asthmatic, the goal is not just to stop the current attack, it is to prevent the next one. This is where Daniel's perspective as a father is so powerful. He is not just doing this for himself anymore. He is doing it to ensure he is not in the hospital when his kid has a milestone or just needs him at home.
I want to go back to one of Daniel's specific questions. When do I see a doctor versus going to urgent care? That is a high-stakes decision when you are struggling for air.
It really is. And this is where specificity matters. You should see your regular doctor or your pulmonologist if you are using your rescue inhaler more than 2 days a week, if you are waking up at night because of asthma more than twice a month, or if you feel like you cannot keep up with your normal physical activities. Those are signs that your maintenance plan is failing. It is not an emergency yet, but it is a scheduled problem.
Okay, so that is the maintenance checkup. What about urgent care?
Urgent care is for when you are in that yellow zone and your usual at-home steps are not working. If you have followed your action plan, used your extra rescue doses, and your peak flow is still sitting in that 60 to 80% range after an hour, you need a medical professional to step in. They can provide a nebulizer treatment or start you on a short course of oral steroids like prednisone to knock down the inflammation before it becomes a full-blown crisis.
And the emergency room, the red zone?
The emergency room is for when you are struggling to speak in full sentences, if you are using your neck muscles to breathe, if your peak flow is below 50% of your best, or, and this is the most dangerous sign, if you stop wheezing but you are still struggling to breathe.
Wait, why is stopping wheezing a bad sign? I would think that means the airways are opening up.
That is a common misconception. Wheezing is the sound of air moving through a narrow space. If the airways become so tight that almost no air is moving at all, the wheezing stops. It is called a silent chest, and it is a medical emergency of the highest order. It means you are minutes away from respiratory arrest. If you are struggling and it goes silent, you do not drive yourself to the hospital. You call an ambulance.
That is a chilling thought. It really highlights why Daniel's desire to be proactive is so important. He wants to stay as far away from that silent chest scenario as possible.
Exactly. And being informed means knowing the history, too. You know, back in the 19th century, the proactive treatment for asthma was often stramonium cigarettes. They were cigarettes made from the Jimson weed plant, which contains atropine-like alkaloids.
Wait, they told people with lung problems to smoke.
They did. And the crazy thing is, it actually worked as a bronchodilator in the short term because those alkaloids relaxed the smooth muscle. But of course, you are inhaling burning plant matter and soot into already inflamed lungs, not to mention the hallucinogenic side effects of Jimson weed. It was the best technology they had at the time, but it was essentially a double-edged sword. We have come so far from that. We now have biological treatments like monoclonal antibodies for people with severe eosinophilic asthma. We have targeted therapies that can almost turn off the specific part of the immune system that is overreacting.
It is amazing how much we have learned about the specific pathways of inflammation. It is not just asthma anymore. It is phenotypes of asthma.
Yes, and that is a great question for Daniel to ask his doctor. What is my asthma phenotype? Is it allergic asthma? Is it exercise-induced? Is it driven by high eosinophils? Knowing the type of asthma you have dictates which medications will be most effective. If your asthma is not driven by leukotrienes, then Singulair might not do much for you. If it is driven by IEE, there are specific injections that can help.
So, to summarize the proactive parent plan for Daniel, 1. Get a peak flow meter and find your true personal best over 2 weeks. 2. Digitize that action plan using an app like Asthma Hub so it is always in your pocket. 3. Ask the doctor about the SMART or air-air therapy approach with a combination inhaler. 4. If starting Singulair, be very mindful of your mental health and communicate any changes to your family and doctor immediately.
And 5. Do not trust the pulse oximeter as your primary all clear. If you feel like you are struggling, trust your body over the little red light on the screen. The goal is to stay in the green zone, and that requires daily, boring consistency.
Boring consistency is the secret to staying out of the terrifying emergency room.
It really is. And you know, we have done over 300 episodes of this show, and we keep coming back to this theme, technology is only as good as the human system it is integrated into. An app cannot breathe for you, but it can give you the data to know when you need help.
I think about our episode 274, where we talked about the logistics of medical supplies in conflict zones. It makes you realize how lucky we are to even have the option of proactive care. Having a working inhaler and a smartphone with a management app is a massive privilege in the grand scheme of human history.
It really is. We have gone from smoke this poisonous weed to here is a Bluetooth-connected sensor that tracks your molecular-level inflammation. It is a good time to be an asthmatic, all things considered.
Daniel, we hope this helps you feel a bit more prepared for that doctor's appointment. Being a proactive patient is the best way to ensure you are there for all those fatherhood moments.
And for everyone else listening, if you have found this useful, or if you have your own weird prompts about health or technology, we would love to hear from you. You can find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com, where there is a contact form and links to all our past episodes.
And hey, if you've been enjoying the show, a quick review on your podcast app or a rating on Spotify really helps us out. It helps other curious people find these deep dives.
It genuinely does. We appreciate every one of you who tunes in every week.
All right, that is a wrap on episode 3 of 37. Thanks to our housemate Daniel for the prompt. We will see you next time on My Weird Prompts.
Stay curious and breathe easy.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.